Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our learning at Sharei. L'zeicha nishmasa and l'yudei nishmasa Miriam Frod, Miriam Baschaim Yitzhak, Allah HaShalom, Miriam Hashem Emerita, continuous aliyah in the schus of the Torah we will share this evening. And of course, we continue to thank her family, the Frod family, for their generous sponsorship of the Torah that we are zocha to share every week in memory of their mother. So we are going to continue our learning. I think I have an important share prepared, but I think I probably always say that. And a meaningful share, I hope. Last time we spoke about giving thanks, and Leah's thanks to Hashem in different ways of understanding what was the godless, the greatness of her thanks. So I'm just going to finish up this section and then get to the insights that I prepared. I'm on page 246 of the second Sefer. So I'm just going to repeat the paragraph we said last time and not do the same Shir on Leah again. The first level, applying the lesson of the revealed situations to the hidden one, relates more to conditional love. By seeing that suffering that seems so bad is really absolute kindness, the obstacle to conditional love disappears. When good things happen, one thanks Hashem and loves him. So that was the springboard for our Shira last week. When good things happen, one thanks Hashem and loves him. And even when bad things happen, page 246, one knows that they are ultimately good. Hence, there is nothing to block conditional love. Okay. The second level, which is the recognition, so I'll be honest. The Lashon, I find language a little bit confusing, his distinction between conditional and unconditional. I'm just going to read through it. In the past, in a number of years in the past, we've struggled with some passages. This is a translation from the Hebrew. I don't know exactly the Lashon in the Hebrew. I'm just going to get through it. We could get his point. Second paragraph on page 246. The second level, which is the recognition that that the human mind can grasp neither kindness nor suffering. So we can't really grasp what is kindness and what is suffering. It's closer to unconditional love. So this is conditional love is based on one's understanding, right? It's conditional. I understand that you did something good for me, therefore I love you in return. I have understanding. Unconditional love is actually unification with the Creator. Okay, when you become one with Hashem, so to speak, as Chazal have taught us, "Ktisha brichu arais and Yisrael chadhu." Hashem, Israel, and Torah are one. So then it's unconditional. No matter what, I'm going to love Hashem because me and Hashem are one. This is not a matter of intellect. It's beyond the intellect. As long as you're trying to understand kindness and suffering, you are still working with the intellect, right? I'm trying to make sense. Is this kindness, what I just saw? Is this suffering, what this person is going through? As long as you're trying to work through these ideas, you're working with intellect. Excuse me. And at best, you possess the kind of love common among created beings, conditional love. So what Hashem did is kindness. So my love of God is conditional upon the kindness. Or what Hashem did looks to be suffering, but I know it's really for the good, so my love is conditional. But when you look with greater depth and understand, you cannot even begin to understand Hashem's providence. We cannot understand Hashkachas Hashem. Certainly, I think one thing we could all agree with the author and ourselves and everybody is that we don't understand Hashem's ways. All of Hashem's acts should be described as your thoughts are extremely deep. Well, that's from Tehillim 92. I just quoted Tehillim 92 in something that's so funny that I was working on around 5:30. Okay, so the pasuk from Tehillim 92:7, that's why I happen to have it right here. Ish ba'ar lo yeda. A brutish man, lo yeda, does not understand Hashem. Uchasil, and a fool, lo yavinesos. That's the pasuk that the author just quoted. A chasil, a fool, cannot understand. And really, vis-a-vis Hashem, we all have this degree of foolishness. We don't understand Hashem's ways. Then it's only your amuna that will connect you to a level beyond creation, and your love will be unconditional. So when you recognize that you really don't understand Hashem's ways, and I don't know what's kindness, I don't know what's suffering, I can't make sense of anything in this world, so your love of Hashem is unconditional. This is very profound. There is a creator, there's a borei olam, someone who created this world, and there are creations, that's us. What is the connection between the two, the creator, the borei, and us, his creations? If one works with the perspective of a creation, he's stuck on the level of a creation. So if I go from my, even though I said I don't really understand, I think I do understand it, as I'm explaining it, it's, I think, I hope I'm doing an okay job, but it's a little wordy. Okay. If one works with the perspective of a creation, he's stuck on the level of a creation. So I'm coming from my perspective. My perspective is I'm a creation. So that means I'm at the level of a creation. There can only be true dveikus, true clinging to the Creator, to God, when a person strives to transcend the conditions of creation. So as long as I stay confined to the level of creation in this world, then I cannot ultimately unite with Hashem, because Hashem is kaviyachol, so to speak, in a different realm, the realm of creator. As long as I stay in the realm of creation, I cannot unite with God. How does one do this? How do you transcend? Vayetze oso hachutza, vayomer habeina hashamayim. Hashem took Avram out of this realm. He took him above the stars. Avram united with the Creator. Yitzchak had a dream of a ladder standing on the ground and reaching to heaven, and there was Hashem on top of him. So one can unite with God when you can move past the realm of this world. So how do we unite with Hashem? We're all creations. How do we move away from our existence? Indeed, with our own understanding, it's impossible. So from the level of me as a creation, it's impossible for me to move out of my realm. But if we have emunah, faith, that Hashem is infinite, and that his kindness is therefore infinite as well, we can connect to him. So as long as you remember that Hashem's kindness is infinite, and Hashem is infinity, I'm on the level of creation with this Mahalach and Machshava, path and thought process, I can increase my amunah. Everything Hashem does is kindness, and move myself out of the realm of this world. Then you can connect to Hashem. Amunah is the only method through which we can have, in a certain sense, a relationship to the infinite. Please listen to these sentences very carefully. Amunah is the only method through which we can have, in a certain sense, a relationship to infinity, meaning God. One who attains such amunah can access unconditional love. Okay. You can only have amunah. Amunah is transcending the view of creation, me as a creation. It's taking myself out of the love of creation up to the love of creator. I believe that everything Hashem does is for the good, whether it seems like kindness or it seems like suffering. I acknowledge I do not understand. With this amunah, I can unify with God and understand that everything is good. How is that? You were here from the beginning. How is that?
I think I get it.
I explained it so clearly. Did I explain it clearly to the people on Zoom? No? Yes? Okay. I'm now going to a piece from none other than drumroll, Mishpacha. I'm almost finished the book. It's fabulous. I have a little bit left. I had to force myself at midnight. I said, Michal, you have to stop. Just stop. You need to go to sleep. Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm going to a piece from this past week, Mishpacha. As you know, as I've told you many times, as we spent about 6 weeks or 8 weeks in the summer talking about this idea that everything Hashem does is for the good, we finally resolved it, I think, by Rabbi Zev Lef's explanation that there is absolute good. In the world of absolute good, everything Hashem does is for the good. We live in a world of he doesn't call absolute good, he calls it absolute truth and subjective truth. In the world of absolute truth, everything is for the good. We live in a world of subjective truth. So what he explained is, what do we say from the east? Mimizrach shemesh amuvo mulal shem Hashem. Why do we say that? We say it in the Hikavah. It's a pasuk from Tehillim. Mimizrach shemesh, from the time the sun rises, amuvo, to the time the sun sets. In the world of absolute truth, the sun doesn't rise and the sun doesn't set. The sun doesn't move. But we live in a world of relative truth, so things are different from our perspective. And from our perspective, there is suffering. From God's perspective, absolute truth, called Avir Rachman al-Tav Avir. Everything is for the good. From our perspective of suffering. So our Mechaber strives mightily to impress upon us this idea repeatedly that we don't understand suffering. We don't understand good. If we move beyond the realm of this world, then we can cling and unify with God, and then we will see that everything's good. Okay. I think it's either very deep and I'm not hopping, or a little bit oversimplistic. It's not so pasha to say there's no suffering. It's not true. And everything is good because there is suffering. We've quoted from Rav Salvechik, who says, one who denies suffering is not but a fantast and a fool. Suffering exists. I'm quoting a piece from Mishpacha this past Shabbos. It's called The Torah's Anchor, like anchor a ship. Rabbi Reuven Leuchter. Does anyone know how you pronounce his last name? Leuchter.
Like Leuchter or something like that.
What?
Leuchter.
Maybe, I don't know. It appears once in Manta's column. This piece speaks very much to me and very much to our learning. Very much to our learning. When I read this, I said, whoa, this has Shari written all over it. Many years ago, my wife's friend passed away, leaving him with 5 young children to raise. When I went to the Shiva house, I found him surrounded by friends and family. I felt a bit superfluous. But when I spoke with him, he told me he was very happy I came. Because, he elaborated, everyone else had tried to explain to him that his wife's passing was really a good thing. I was the first to acknowledge that something terrible had happened. Did anyone see in the Jewish home this week? There was just an ad, like for Rofei Cholim Cancer Society, but they had maybe it was Dr. David Lieberman, I'm not sure I remember the exact name, I think maybe it's like a psychologist or psychiatrist who works for a team, I don't know, or a doctor, who said like 4 things you should never say to the family who is suffering. Did you see it?
I don't get the Jewish home one. Oh.
So 4 things you should never say, and it also related to our shir. You should never say this is all for the best. You should not try to give them chizuk stories in that moment. You should not try and explain to them why Hashem loves them and why it really worked out this way. In the moment, you should say with them quietly. So this man, this Rabbi Reuven Leuchter, went to see his friend who was sitting Shiva. The wife was Nefteris, there were 5 young children. He said everyone else who came to the Shiva house tried to explain to him that his wife's passing was really a good thing. Only Rabbi Reuven Leuchter, his friend, was the first to acknowledge that, quote, something terrible had happened. We all understand my friend's visitors, the other people. They try to, how do you pronounce it, alleviate, assuage?
Assuage?
Oh, really? They try to assuage his grief by reminding him, what would I do without you guys? I'm not joking. By reminding him, I would use Google to but I don't, so I need you. They tried to assuage his grief by reminding him of one of the pillars of our emunah. Listen! They tried to assuage his grief, am I saying it right? By reminding him of one of the pillars of our emunah. Everything Hashem does is for the good. And even the greatest tragedy is really part of his benevolent plan. Did you hear? You were distracted. Listen again. The friend's visitors try to assuage his grief by reminding him of one of the pillars of Emunah. And that is that everything Hashem does is for the good. And even the greatest tragedy is really part of God's benevolent plan. Not just his plan, his benevolent plan. That's exactly what the Mechaber keeps saying. Everything they said was true. But they did not succeed in comforting him. Where did they go wrong? Life is like a void. You want to say something?
I feel like that there's a different perspective on the same thing. Like, there's the individual and kind of the collective or the global perspective. Like, for that person at that moment, obviously, it's a terrible tragedy. It doesn't comfort him to know that it's part of a larger plan.
But it's not the right time to tell him that.
No, of course not. That's not the right time. And
right, that's what Chazal say in Pirkei Avos. Al tanachamei b'shar shemeso muta
lefanav. You have to listen to
So listen to what he says, because we all know that up here. But when you try and alleviate someone's grief by whitewashing or brushing off their tzara, at that moment they cannot hear. This is, quote, ultimately good. The Mechaber wrote on the previous page, even when bad things happen, one knows that they're ultimately good. I have a big problem. I have a very big problem with negating suffering and negating pain. We are human beings, and this is how God made us.
It never works. You
know, what?
Even if it's a 5-year-old who's upset that the lollipop broke.
Even?
If it's a small child who's upset about something that seems insignificant, it doesn't work to tell them that it doesn't matter.
Correct.
To that person at that time, a large thing or a small thing.
Correct.
The best thing to do is say you're...
We're agreeing. We agree. Yeah.
I think the books focus on it bothers me less than the Shiva story does. I think this one is more like, we always talk about, like, you work on your avodah when it's not in a crisis mode.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm okay with understanding that Hashem has a larger plan when it's in our safe environment of Sha'arei and it's Wednesday night and that's it, as opposed to in a Shiva house. Like, I think it's more,
right.
Like, this doesn't bother me as much because, like, this is the pillar of avodah that we're building on for chas v'shalom bad situations.
Okay.
Like, I think it's just not...
Yes, but... This isn't, when we read this book in Sha'arei, it's meant to be applied to life. It's not just to stay within these dalet amos for 45 minutes a week.
100%. But I'm saying, like, once I built the pillars during the course of everyday life, then when it comes to the tragedy...
We're not talking about course of everyday life. We're talking about the when we're thrown off course. He specifically says when things happen that seem bad, that seem like suffering. He's not talking about everyday life.
Okay. But it could be something that we should work on ourselves, like she's saying, but you can't do that to someone else. That's not...
Right, that's also true.
Not a place to do that.
Okay, so let me keep going with the article, okay? Everything Hashem... Oh, okay, one sec. Everything they said to him was true. So where did they go wrong? I want to see something. Loyal. Leuchter? Rabbi Leuchter? Rabbi Leuchter, like loyal. Okay, thank you. Life is a voyage across the sea. Most of the time, the sailing is smooth. Sometimes there's a stretch of choppy water. But once in a while, there's a storm. So everyday life is sea smooth sailing. Sometimes it's a little choppy. And every once in a while, there's a storm. At some point, most people experience a major crisis when it seems impossible to go on. Maybe not anyone here, but this is the way life works. At some point, most people experience a major crisis when it seems impossible to go on. That's the storm. That storm of life threatens to pull us out of our world into the narrow cell of our own emotions. The ship is now in danger of being swept away. We need an anchor to hold it in place. So you're on a ship. Life is a ship. We're on a voyage. And when it's smooth sailing, it's easy. And when it's a little bit choppy, put on your seatbelt. What happens when there's a major storm and now your ship is going to sink? It's going to be sailed. It's going to be cast away in the storm. You need an anchor to hold you in place. It's a metaphor for us. When you hit the major crisis in life, the really difficult nisyonos, the suffering... Suffering. He repeats it many, many times. If we have emunah, Hashem is infinite. His kindness is infinite. We can connect to him. Emunah is the only method through which we have, in a certain sense, a relationship to the infinite. But listen what Rabbi Reuven Leuchter says. The emunah that everything Hashem does is for the good is vital to our lives as Jews. We all agree upon that. He is the Tova Meitiv Kilolim Chasto. But in a moment of storm, that's a weak anchor. It won't save you from a raging storm, because the storm will always be stronger than saying this is for the good when you're going through that Nisayon. The reason is simple. We cannot understand Hashem's plan. Everyone also agrees with that. One day, Hashem will open our eyes to see the reason for everything that happened in our lives and in all of history. But for the time being, we don't even have the ability to understand. So our experience remains a painful one. I know that some people, some listeners, don't agree with me. And that's okay. Everyone's entitled to their own mahalach and approach and whatever gets you through life, for real, as a believing, practicing healthy Jew. But to invalidate pain, I don't think it helps while we're in this world to say that that trauma, that suffering is for the good right now in this moment. It serves some good purpose. He says that's a very weak anchor to get us through a difficult time. If you don't relate to this, okay, you don't have to relate to this. Our experience remains a painful, and we're in a world of emotion. Hashem, just like I mentioned last week, the leaves. Hashem made the leaves change color. It's just a fact. Hashem made people's emotions. We're not robots. We're just not. Yosef cried. Avram cried. Yaakov became angry. Rachel was jealous. I'm not talking about the Midrashim and Rashi. It's the Pshat. The Pshat cannot be ignored. because we're human beings. Why did Rachel say, Havali banivim ayin mesar nochi? I don't understand. Everything Hashem does is good for the good. Why do you want to die if you have infertility? You shouldn't want to die. That's what she said. Don't bring me the drush. There's a text. Hashem wrote the Torah's pshat. What is she saying? What does Rivka say when she's pregnant? Im kein lama zar nochi? This is the pregnancy I davened for? I'd rather not have this. How could Rachel say, I'm going to die? She's threatening her husband that she's going to die. Why did Amram separate from his wife? If everything Hashem does for the good, so stay with your wife and throw the babies into the river. You can't deny our human experience. We believe that what happened was somehow for the best. But that amunah doesn't relate to this experience. In other words, the amunah that this is for the best does not relate to the experience that person is going through. Shiva houses are full, lo aleinu, are full of well-meaning visitors who tell the mourner a sudden tragedy may be our karban to save Klal Yisrael from a massive blow. Or the deceased received tremendous chuyos because other people were roused to do teshuva. Might all be true, but it's not an anchor. When the ship is threatening to blow away because you're in a storm, you need something to ground you. Statements like these don't help a mourner cope with pain. This is much more humanistic. We need ways to cope with pain. We need to acknowledge that there is pain. We need to say there is suffering. It exists. They don't give him the tools to deal with his painful experience. Quote, they simply dismiss it. I know everything Hashem does is for the best, but I'm still in pain. Yosef cried repeatedly, can't stop crying. We're coming up to this story next week. The brothers hated him. They were human beings. Statements like these, that quote, it's a weak anchor, the amunah that everything Hashem does is for the good, is vital to our lives as Jews, but at the same time, it's not a tool. It's not a tool to cope with how you're feeling. Hashem made you a human being. He didn't make you a robot. If you don't feel any pain when you're in any sorrow, then you're a robot. You're not a person. I heard Rabbi Zev Lev say, even the Gedolim cry by a Levaya. Why are they crying by a Levaya? Statements like these don't help a mourner cope with pain. They don't give him tools to deal with his painful experience. Quote, they simply dismiss it. As if to say, you've got it all wrong. Really, your reality is a pleasant one. It doesn't help a person in the middle of a crisis to sugarcoat his situation. Doing so might at the most distract him from the bitter reality. It's just a distraction. But at some point, it will return with full force. A certain Rosh Yeshiva once suffered a family tragedy. The whole Shiva, he told his visitors, everything Hashem does is for the good, and we must accept his gzeiros with simcha. It was amazing to see his emunah. Rav Wolbe Zatzal, the Ali Shur, told Rabbi Leuchter, it won't last long. Ultimately, he was right, because several weeks later, the Rosh Yeshiva was totally unable to function. He wasn't a... He was... Charlton? Like a faker, a person... Yeah, how do you pronounce it?
Charlatan.
His emunah was steadfast. His emunah was steadfast, but he tried to use emunah to bypass the pain. If you say, everything Hashem does is for the good, and I don't know the difference between kindness and suffering. You don't know the difference between kindness and suffering? You don't know, after the Har Nof attack, that some people are suffering? You don't know? You cannot use emunah to bypass pain. Hashem made us creatures who have feeling. It doesn't help because he experienced the pain, but at that moment he did not experience the goodness of Hashem's plan. Yes, Hashem has a plan that's good, but he's not experiencing it in the moment, which only God can understand. A person going through a storm needs an anchor, not to try to convince himself that the storm doesn't exist. A person going through a storm needs an anchor. He doesn't need to try to convince himself that the storm does not exist. We need an anchor to deal with our experiences rather than deny them. I'm going to go to the parasha. This week's parasha is Vayishlach. And in parasha's Vayishlach, Yaakov meets up with Esav after 20 years. Esav wants to kill him. The last time they saw each other, Yaakov is very afraid. He prepares for battle in three ways. He divides his camp, he prays, and he sends 550 animals to Esav as appeasement. The night before the quarrel, he finds himself alone on the river Yabok. Why is he alone? Vayivatar Yaakov Levado. Why is he alone? He moves all his family. And what does Rashi say? Why is he alone? Hello?
To get the small vessels.
Yeah. So I was learning with last night a very, very small group of recent Chozrok B'Teshuvah. So one of them said they learned the Neveh. He went back for Tupperwares. So I said, okay. What?
Very cute.
It's very
cute.
I know. I was smiling. I said, I never heard a phrase that way, but okay. He went back for some small jars. That's a whole other shear. Vayivasar Yaakov levado. Vayaveik ish imo ar alos hashakra. So there's many interpretations. I'm going to quote the pshat of the Rashbam. It's interesting because when my husband and I were in Florida for a few days, right at the end of June, on one of my walks, it rained actually the whole week, so I hardly got to walk. But one time when I actually did get to walk, Sima Geffen, you have to wait for the anchor. We're not there yet. I stopped in the middle of the article to go to the parsha. It might end up being this week and next week. I'm not sure if I'm going to get through the whole thing this week. Okay? So, that's like, you know, when you're driving with the kids to Toronto when they're little and they want to, are we there yet? Like, no, we're not there yet. We're not even halfway through the trip. So, everyone, bear with me, okay? Because I'm trying to get there. But I'm taking a break from this piece to go to the parasha. So, I'm going to quote the pshat of the... Oh, when I was in Florida for a few days with my husband, I was listening to Shir Rabbi Zavlev, and it was on Parshas Vayishlach. It was just random, whatever. I just chose whatever I thought I didn't listen to. And I first heard him mention this back in June. I totally forgot about it. Sorry. I even kept the shiur in my inbox, so I wouldn't forget about it until I was re-preparing my shiur for Vayishlach, and I saw it referenced in a different sefer, and I went to look it up. So let me tell you the psukim. And Yaakov was all alone, and a man wrestled with him until the morning dawn. First, I'm just telling you the pshat. Vayar kilo yachalo, he saw he could not overcome. Vayiga bekaf yirecho, he struck the thigh, the ball of the hip bone, the socket, in his hip. Vateka kaf yarech Yaakov beha avko imo, and the thigh, the socket of the ball, I don't know exactly the correct anatomy, okay? The ball of the socket of the thigh bone became dislocated. It's Ashkenazic tradition, according to Oyu Alachayomis, it's a sciatic nerve, became dislocated. He said, send me, because the morning sun has dawned. The angel has to sing Shira. I will not send you to Gemir Bracha. He said, what's your name? Yaakov. Your name will not be Yaakov anymore, because Yisrael, because you have wrestled. You have wrestled with God and with man, and you have overcome. And Yaakov says, what's your name? And he says, why do you need to know my name? And he blesses him there. Yaakov calls the place Piniel, Panakel. He saw Hashem face to face. The sun shone, and he was limping. And therefore, the Bnei Yisrael do not eat the Gid Hanasha until this very day. Let's talk about the Rashbam. Okay, the last thing we spoke about from Rabbi Reuven Neuchter is that Amuna is Hashem. Everything Hashem does is good for us. That's vital to our lives as believing Jews. But in the moment of a raging storm, it's a weak anchor. In other words, it won't hold you in place at that moment because the storm will always be stronger. The reason is simple. We can't understand Hashem's plan. We believe it was for the best, but that doesn't relate to the experience I'm experiencing right now. Statements like these do not help a mourner cope with pain. They don't give us tools. They simply dismiss our pain. As if to say, you've got it all wrong. Really, your reality is pleasant. It does not help the person in the middle of a crisis to sugarcoat the situation. And finally, I recapped just a few sentences. A person going through a storm needs an anchor. He does not need to try to convince himself the storm does not exist. So in other words, we can't run away from facing the reality that you're in a storm. Maybe this doesn't speak to you. Maybe your anchor is, I'm really talking about the difficult things. I'm talking about the raging storm. I'm not talking about the waters a little bit choppy, okay? Maybe you've never been through such things. I'm not being facetious, really, nah, chas v'sham. I'm not being sarcastic. If this does not relate to anything you've ever been through in your life, and really your mahalach, and you're able to stay on track with everything Hashem does is for the good, and I'm talking about the real crises in life, okay, then this is not for you. You can hang up the Zoom. I'm not being sarcastic at all. For many people, myself included, going through difficult things is painful. So does that mean I'm not a believing, practicing Jew because I experience pain? But if everything Hashem does is for the best, then why do I experience any pain? Then I should never have pain. If it's for the best, it's kindness. Because that emuna, in a cognitive level, is not an anchor because it doesn't relate to what I'm experiencing right now. What does the Rashbam have to say? Who was this angel that was fighting with Yaakov? So everybody knows it's the Sar Shel Esav. Rashbam says something amazing. Vayivasar Yaakov levado, it's Perek Lamed Beis Chaf Hei for your reference. Yaakov was left all alone. Vayavek ish imo, they kicked up dust with their feet until the morning sun shone. Says the Rashbam, Vayivasar Yaakov levado, Klomar, please listen very carefully. Sheheivir kol shelo, he crossed everything that was his to the other side of the river. Shelo haya od la'avor elohu levado. So there was only who left? He himself was left. Viratza la'avor achareihem, he wanted to cross back after his family. Ki livroach derech acheres, shelo yifgeshenu Esav niskavein. Who understood what I just said? He was to go a different way.
That Esav isn't going to.
But you missed a key word.
Oh.
Ki livroach. He wanted to run away. He didn't want to confront Esav. He didn't want to deal with this. He wanted to run away from his problem. Vayivasar Yaakov vado. Klomar sheheevir kol sherlo. I said already with the translation. Shelo haya od la'avor elohu levado. Viratza la'avor achareihem. Ki livroach. Doesn't say he wanted to go a different way. He wanted to flee, escape, run away. Derech achera, shelo yifgeshenu Esav niskavi. Rabbi Zev Lev said in the share, and I haven't listened again. I actually left it in my inbox so I could listen again before Vayeshech, and I simply haven't had the time. But I still remember, because I listened to it twice in Florida. He said there's three ways of dealing with a problem. A person who runs away from confronting what's before them is always going to be running away from everything in life. We have to face it head on. And he quoted this from Yaakov, and then I went to look it up this week. Yaakov wanted to run away. That's why he was left alone. Vayavek. So there's a man wrestling with him. You know why Hashem sent the Malach? Malach, imo, shelo yuchal livroach. What does it mean since you translated the first?
That it's going to be with him so that he can't escape.
It was with him so that?
Such that he can't escape.
Vayeavek, an angel wrestled with him, imo, shelo yuchal livroach. So he could not run away. V'yirakim havtachasu shel kosh baruch hu shelo yizakeu Esav. He will see the upholding of the bracha, the promise of God that Esav won't harm him. So he wanted to run away, so Hashem sends an angel, so he should not run away. Vayeavek ish imar alas ha-shachar, that was on Pasuk Chav Hei. Vayar ki lo yachalo, he saw he could not overcome. So the Rashbam says, Hamalach, the Malach saw. V'ratza la'avor v'livroach ba'al karcho, he wanted to pass over the river and run away against his will. He's still trying to get away. He wants to run away. He doesn't want to confront what's in front of him. He wants to run away. Sometimes it's a lot easier to run away from our problems than to confront them. It's a lot easier to dull the pain. Rahman said, why do people turn to substance abuse? Not always, but sometimes. It's to dull the pain because it's easier to dull the pain because the human experience is a painful experience. That's just how Hashem made us. Okay, I'm continuing with the Rashbam. I'm skipping the ones that aren't relevant to this pshat. You could go home and look up the whole Rashbam. It's easy Hebrew. Then he's renamed Yisrael. The Rashbam's Parashat Zayir Pshor, by the way, he's the this is like one of the longest Rashbams I've ever seen. He's the grandson of Rashi. Then he gets a bracha. Your name will not be Yaakov anymore, which means dependency or heel. Your name will be Yisrael, from Sar, prince, and also from to quarrel, to struggle, to strive, Sarisa. Kisarisa. Says the Rashbam, listen carefully. Umash, please listen. Umasha laka Yaakov v'nitzla. Yaakov was hit, he was struck, and he was injured and limping. Lafisha kosh baruchu hivtichu v'hu haya boreach. Hashem made him a promise, but he was running away. Rashbam says it's a punishment. He was injured because he's trying to run away from his problems. V'kein matzidu b'chol ha'hochim b'derech, shalo b'ratzon ha'kodesh baruch hu, o mima'anim l'lecha shana anshu. And so we find, he's going to bring us other examples from Chumash, with those who are going on the way, not by the will of God, or they refuse to go on the path, and they are punished. What's another place in Chumash, where Hashem wants someone to go on a certain path, and he doesn't?
Yonah.
Who?
Yonah.
Oh, very nice. Does he mention Yonah? I believe so. Yes, Yonah, that's what I thought. One of them is Yonah. Who else? The other two that he quotes are from Chumash. Not Nach, but very nice, Yonah.
Bilam,
very good. Very good. Bilam. And interestingly, Moshe. Yeah. But Moshe, Ksiv, that's his first example. Moshe says to God, don't send me, shlach na biyad tishlach. I don't want to go on this mission. Thank you very much. Send Aaron instead of me. Vayichar af Hashem v'Moshe. Hashem became very angry at Moshe. And he says, what was the punishment? I'm skipping a little bit because you could go read it at home. What was the punishment? Vayihi b'derech b'malon v'yifkisheyo Hashem v'yivakesh ha'miso. Remember right after he ends up in the hotel, this strange story in the hotel, and that serpent swallowing him and wants to kill him. Rashbam says it's because he didn't want to go on the Shem. He didn't want to confront going back to Egypt and go on the path Hashem wanted him to go on. V'chim b'yona, shenivla b'mei hadaga. So too with Yonah, he was swallowed by the innards of the fish. V'chim b'bilam. Very, very nice. So too with Bilam. So Yonah was punished. He was swallowed by the fish. He was suffering in the fish for 3 days. Bilam was punished and he was pushed into the wall. And therefore he too was punished. So the Rashbam the Rashbam says Beferesh, and I heard it from Rabbi Zev Lev, and then Rabbi Laura Jonathan Sachs refers to it, which is when I went to look it up and remembered Rabbi Zev Lev Shir, that this angel was specifically sent to prevent Yaakov from running away. You need to confront what is before you. He was afraid he was going to be killed. Why was he afraid? Everything Hashem does is for the good. Vayetzerlo, what are you paying for? Why are you aggrieved? Why are you afraid? We're talking about Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir Sheva Avos. Going back to the article. A person going through a storm, and again, I'm really not being sarcastic or chutzpahdik or facetious. If you are able to get through the very difficult situations in life by saying this exact thing is like I can relate to this as being good, and you are on a very different madriga than me. And for me, I believe it's from Hashem. I know it's from Hashem. I know there's a master plan. This is still painful for me, whatever that situation is. And because I'm a human being, and that's how Hashem made me. A person, and if it doesn't relate to you, then you don't have to listen. A person going through a storm needs an anchor. They do not need to try to convince themselves that the storm doesn't exist. You're about to meet Esau. Don't convince yourself he's not there. Don't try and run away. Don't go a different way. God sent a malach to force him to stay there. Confront it. He's coming. You're afraid? Okay, be afraid. Deal with it. He's coming. We need an anchor that deals with our experience rather than denying it. Wait, now I wanted to quote from Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs, actually. Who I really don't usually quote from at all, but the past couple of weeks I found very impactful insights. I taught by the Lord Jonathan Sachs. It was just his yahrzeit, Zichrono Livracha, about 2 weeks ago. Crisis. What happened? Crisis can challenge us at the deepest level of the self, threatening our self-confidence and self-respect. That is where we need to concentrate our effort and focus our energies. We are here because someone, the one, capital O, wanted us to be here. He loves us, understands us, forgives us when we acknowledge our mistakes, and he believes in us more than we believe in ourselves. This is where true self-confidence is born, the faith that lights the way in the heart of darkness. Hashem ro'i lo echzar. The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Rashi's grandson, Rashbam, when I saw by Lord Jonathan Sacks, refers to it. That's when I remember the Rabbi Zavlov spoke of, but I went to look it up. Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, gives an extraordinary interpretation of Jacob's wrestling match. Fearing the confrontation with Esav, Jacob wanted to run away. So God sent an angel to wrestle with him to stop him from doing so. On reading this, God was teaching Jacob how to wrestle with his fears and how to overcome them. Who is strong, says Ben Zoma, Perkei Avos, Perek Dal, Mishnah Aleph, not one who defeats his enemies, but one who masters his impulses. What actually happened the next day when Yaakov finally came face to face with Esav? Instead of attacking him, Esav ran to meet him. Right, the night before, he's with the Sarshal Esav, the superpower, if you will, the heavenly angel, the being of Esav. But the next day he meets Esav. Esav hugs him and he kisses him and he embraces him. There's no anger, no violence, no resentment. Everything Jacob feared failed to happen. Was it a mere coincidence? Happenstance? Did I say that right? Happenstance? Were Jacob's fears simply misplaced? I believe, says Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, the Torah is teaching us a very deep truth. Once Jacob resolved the conflict within himself, he removed the tension between himself and Esav. It's a different approach. Even animals sense fear. Predators chase those who run away. The way of safety is to stay calm and still. I also thought this was interesting because we spent a few weeks talking about calm and still. What was the midah we spoke about?
The quality.
Hishtavus ha-nefesh.
It's also interesting that he's talking about animals because all other three cases that the Rashbam brought, everyone who was running,
because all other?
All the other three cases that the Rashbam brought were all stopped by an animal, whether it was the snake, the donkey, or the
fish, very nice.
They were all kind of stopped by like a...
Very, very nice. Very nice. Even animals can sense fear, and all the other examples of the Rashbam. Moshe was almost killed by a serpent. Bilam was injured by a donkey, and Yonah was swallowed by a fish. Very nice. The way of safety is to stay calm and still. That's the Ishtavas and Nefesh that we spoke about previously. Jacob limped after the fight, and with this I'll finish. So it means we're continuing next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Quote, crisis is real, says our brother Jonathan Sacks. The suffering to which it gives rise can cut deep. Even when you survive, you limp. Long afterwards, perhaps for a lifetime, you bear the scars, but they are honorable scars. They tell you that you fought, and greater is the one who fought than the one who, fearing confrontation, takes the path of least resistance and submits. I will repeat that. Jacob limped after the fight. Crisis is real. It could work for you. It could be your Das Torah. It could get you through the storm. It doesn't work for me. That in the moment of that pain, to say this too is good. I can say it intellectually. It doesn't work for me to say that this subjectively is something good. Whether it's nationally differentiated, nationally, individually. Hey, we don't understand the Holocaust. It has some plan. You lend me the book. So she didn't even have time to say goodbye. They didn't even know where the mother and the little brother and the younger sister were taken. They didn't even understand what happened to them. It's the most extreme example. In a sense, says Rabbi Reuven Leuchter, this approach, in a sense, is denying suffering and convincing ourselves that the storm does not exist. We must have an anchor to hold our ship in place rather than deny that the ship is in a storm. I'm going to end again by quoting those same sentences from Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. Jacob limped after the fight. Crisis is real. The suffering to which it gives rise can cut deep, and even when you survive, you limp. He was limping. He survived the crisis, but he was limping. Long afterwards, perhaps for a lifetime, you bear the scars. But they are honorable scars. They tell that you fought, and greater is the one who fought than the one who, fearing confrontation, takes the path of least resistance and submits. So Be'ezrat Hashem, we will continue next week. It's a heavy-duty topic. And again, I understand that for some people on a higher or different level, maybe this doesn't speak to you. Since I'm the one giving Shira, I choose the material as it relates to Amuna. But it's not denying Hashem as a plan. It's not denying in some master place, which we will understand in the eternal world, that it's for the good. But it's acknowledging that when we're here, I don't think it's correct to say I can't distinguish between kindness and suffering. Hashem made me with emotions. The Gedolim cry also. We can distinguish between kindness and suffering. I can't understand it in the master plan. But when there's a crisis, you can't run away. And sometimes running away is denying suffering, not just physically running away like Yaakov wanted to do. And Hashem sent an angel to say, no, you have to confront it. You have to face it. You have to deal with it. So Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, we will continue. There is Shir next week. Sometimes people wonder if Erev, the secular holiday, there is Shir Be'ezrat Hashem next week. And we wish the Neshama Mir and Fromir, Maschai Mitzvah, continuous Aliyah. I thank everyone for joining. Besoros Tovos to all. Thank you, Kol Tov.